In the battle of World Cup jersey sponsorships, Nike is poised to beat out soccer juggernaut and arch rival Adidas. With eight countries now set to duke it out on the field in the quarterfinals, Nike represents four teams, Adidas three, and Puma has one. According to one analyst, in the 2014 World Cup games, Germany accounted for a third of Adidas's roughly 9 million team jersey sales, and 10% of those sales came after Germany won the tournament.
Pagonis watching his boat get smashed to pieces, grimacing at the sight. He's one of hundreds of fishermen turning in their vessels and licenses in exchange for cash. The payments can go as high as 260,000 euros. That's over $300,000. It's part of a joint scheme between the EU and Greece to encourage people to leave the trade. The aim is to protect fish stocks and end overfishing. After years of economic crisis that drained salaries and left a fifth of adults jobless, for many, the money is too good to ignore.
The forbidding terrain of the Gobi Desert, at the centre of exciting new fossil finds. 35 scientists and explorers found at least 250 new fossil locations and hundreds of fossilised bones. Among the findings were remains of previously unknown species. Explorers credit satellite and drone imaging with their success.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's July 5th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Happy you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. Getting back at it, if you're one of those that has not the rest of the week off, like those of us here, we're still happy you're here, but it's going to be a kind of a slow day in the business world. Lots of folks have the entire week off, although the markets have reopened. Today on the broadcast, it's Thought Leader Thursday, and Don Lloyd is here from Associated Bank. We're going to be talking about foreign exchange and some foreign currency markets news this morning. We'll bring in Don momentarily. Frank Manzo's here today, too. He's the policy director of the Illinois Economic Policy Institute. We're going to have a conversation about Chicago's minimum wage going up, whether that's a good thing for the economy and business. That's in our second segment this morning at about 5:40. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Asian markets tumbled today as China reiterated its determination to protect its interest in a trade dispute with the United States. Trading was subdued in the absence of leads from Wall Street. Markets were closed yesterday, as you know, for the Independence holiday. Futures in the U.S. are pointing toward opening gains later, up 132 on the Dow, up about 42 on the NASDAQ, up about 16 on the S&P. In Europe, markets are generally higher. In London, up about a third, almost a half a percent now. Then DAX is up about a percent and a half as well in Germany. And in France, the markets are up about a half a percent as well. Oil is trading at $74.53 a barrel, which is up about 39 cents. We don't want to forget the rest of Asia either. The Nikkei is going to finish down 170 points. The Hang Seng off a quarter. The Shanghai is off about a percent. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. Of course, we mentioned the trade story. Chinese government spokesman says Beijing will not bow in the face of threats and blackmail on the eve of U.S. tariff hikes and will defend its interest. The Commerce Ministry spokesman says that Beijing will wait to see what Washington does before taking action on its own. The Trump administration is poised to raise tariffs on $34 billion of Chinese imports on Friday in the dispute over technology policy. China has threatened to retaliate. Fears that China is threatening U.S. technology leadership in robots, electric cars, and other advanced technologies are pushing the two biggest economies toward a full-blown trade war. Despite the threat from President Trump on tariffs on Chinese goods, Beijing is not scaling back any of its plans as it sees a path to prosperity and global influence with technology investment in the West. China remains heavily reliant on technologies from the West as well. So we'll see what happens going forward. Tomorrow's going to be a big day in terms of all of the tariff news. Flamboyant internet entrepreneur Kim.com and three of his colleagues have lost their latest bid to avoid extradition to the U.S. to face criminal charges. New Zealand's Court of Appeals yesterday upheld earlier court rulings that the men were eligible to be handed over for two U.S. authorities. The decision comes more than 6 years after U.S. authorities shut down .com's file-sharing website Mega Upload and filed charges of conspiracy, racketeering, and money laundering against the men. If found guilty, they face decades in prison. It is Thought Leader Thursday here on the Opening Bell. Don Lloyd is in. He's the SVP and manager of capital markets, the foreign exchanges, rate swaps, commodity derivatives are all in his wheelhouse at Associated Bank. Don, welcome back to the Opening Bell. Good morning.
Steve, good morning. Good to be here.
I don't know where we begin today, but maybe trade? Maybe are we officially in a trade war, or are we still on the edge of it?
Survivors, the trade war games. That's what's going on right now. And yes, this is a full-fledged verbal and actual action trade war that's going on. So get the textbooks out. We're going to write about this and learn about it for the next 50 years on what's going on here. So this is it. Yeah. You know, it gets no better than this, and we have a front row seat.
And so what are the negative and positive implications of what we're seeing?
Well, first, you know, go ahead and put tariffs to our ag business, put tariffs to our automobiles, but by God, don't touch our cheese and don't touch our bourbon.
Right.
You know, the message that's coming out of the trade wars is this is going to fall straight on the consumer. Prices are going to go up. People are going to be laid off. Jobs are going to be impacted. So it's going to fall right on the consumers where it's going to fall on eventually or ultimately. The good news, though, is that this country's at full employment. So, you know, if the pieces start moving around and people start getting laid off because of the tariffs and we're not selling like we used to, that excess capacity of jobs is just going to sit there and suck these people right up. I mean, I think if you're ever going to have a trade war, now's not a bad time to do it. In the general scheme of things, as bad as I think trade wars are and tariffs are, I'm not a big proponent of it. Every once in a while, you have to have a reset button, and that's what we're doing right now. We're going to sit there. We're going to take a look at these trade agreements that are out there, and we're going to renegotiate them, and everybody's coming to the table around it, and that's a little pain and suffering to get there. There's going to be a spill out to the consumer, but glass half full kind of guy that I am, this is the time to do it, because anybody that gets displaced, I think it's going to be, you know, able to find a job without too much problem.
The math on this, though, if we start seeing these prices go up, and they already are in things like washing machines and soon Harley Davidsons and you name it, isn't inflation going to kick into a point where, God forbid, we see something like the 1970s again?
Yeah, that's a concern. Now, whether we go back to the 70s will be interesting. The good news is that the Fed's already ahead of it. You know, we're already in a rising interest rate environment where the whole market has sort of priced in rate hikes and everything. The Fed's on top of it. The speed or the rate of change might change depending on where inflation comes from. But it's not like we're starting flat-footed on this. So, again, just like we're at full employment, we're in a position where the Fed is sort of ahead of the curve when it comes to the whole inflation thing. So I'm not too concerned about that. Inflation's running now a little bit over 2%. You're going to see rate hikes continue, or at least Fed funds targeted higher. But the yield curve's staying really, really flat. I mean, inflation's not being looked at in the market with any concern as of yet. That might change next year as capacity just totally diminishes with job creation, with everybody working, with the economy doing what it's doing. Inflationary pressures will come back probably in a year.
What are you seeing in the global currency markets in the middle of all of this?
Sure. The countries that are really getting hit the hardest are those that are exporting to the U.S. Those that are exporting to the U.S. So really, if you look at China, if you look at Taiwan, if you look at Korea, those are probably the countries that are getting smacked the hardest. Chinese yuan has depreciated about 3.5% or so over the last 2 to 3 weeks. Canadian dollar is another one. They're a big trade partner with the U.S. Canadian dollar has weakened about 3 to 4% over the last 3 to 4 weeks, right around in there. None of those currencies are regaining any ground that they've lost to the dollar. So again, the initial stages of a trade war, those are the ones that are going to get hit the hardest. The question is, where's the money going? Mm-hmm. Where's this global pool of money flowing to? Where's the safe haven money that's going? And that's what the market hasn't really figured out yet. Are they looking for high yield returns? Are they looking for stable investments? Where's that money going to go to? We know where it's not going. We know it's getting hurt, but the money's moving to the sideline right now and haven't really found out where it's headed to it yet.
You mentioned earlier that you feel like there's some negotiation going on.
Mm-hmm.
Are you comfortable with people staying level-headed about all of this? Or?
Well, you know, 2, 3, 4 months ago, I probably would have been more concerned than I am now. The current administration seems to pull a lot of what seems to be 180-degree changes, and, you know, that's crisis over here this week, and all of a sudden a cloud passes and there's some agreement and some breakthrough and we're in a little bit better situation. You've seen that sort of over and over again with this administration. I think this trade war is taking the same pattern. The rhetoric gets heated up. All of a sudden some items get hit, get tagged, you know, numbers are thrown around. You know, we're starting to throw some soft punches. You know, is it really going to come to a bare knuckle fight, all out fight? No. If the pattern continues the way it has in on other topics or with this administration, you know, major breakthrough, we've renegotiated some trade agreement, and it's the best trade agreement we've ever had in our life. And all of a sudden, whether it's 6 months from now, it's gone. Mm-hmm. It's like, where the heck did it go? That was a big news item, you know, 6 months ago, yeah. And now it seems to be totally resolved and something else has taken its place and we're worried about that now. I think that's probably what's going to happen here. So I don't see this as going to just a free-for-all bare-knuckle fight that these things can get into.
Yeah. And you mentioned, it's funny you mentioned that, because this technology, just a week or so ago, the technology part of this, where there was the president said he wanted to stop the sharing of technology between China and the U.S., that's now gone away. He's going to say, now let Congress deal with that. So for like a week, everybody was concerned about it.
Yep.
Now he says, let Congress deal, and the market goes back up.
And I think that's just the nature and the character of this administration. You know, I think the press likes to get on it big time. They like to take the headline, and I think the administration likes to blow it up, make it a crisis, and then the behind-the-scenes negotiation, whatever that is, we get to where we want to be, and then everything's fine. Everything calms back down. But we've seen that over and over again, and I think we'll continue to see that with any topic that comes up with this current administration.
Are there money-making opportunities here while all this is going on?
You better believe it. I mean, there's always money.
Yeah.
Again, it doesn't matter if the dollar is going up or down, or as long as there's news like this in the market and uncertainty in the market, it creates volatility. And for the speculators, they've got to love it because, again, whether you're long or short, whatever commodity it is or investment you are, that's volatility is good. For the short-term, real short-term speculator, they're just in seventh heaven. They're enjoying the whole thing. The longer-term investor, you know, it's one of those where it's uncertain. You just got to sit tight, ride it out, be smart about your money. You know, I wouldn't call it a risk-on market at this stage, but, you know, certainly people are getting a little bit more defensive in their longer-term type investments. But the speculators absolutely love it.
I want to shift gears to Brexit.
Sure.
What's going on with Brexit? And even renewed calls now to stop this in its tracks.
Be careful what you vote for.
Right.
You know, and it's not be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you vote for in a referendum.
Yeah.
Because this thing is marching full steam ahead. I mean, when you just had the Queen that has given her royal assent to the whole Brexit move and the UK leaving, it's law. I mean, March 29th of 2019 is the end date that this is going to happen. It goes to the next level and has been are pretty much there already, but formally now has gone to the next level, which is how do we sit there and renegotiate the debt that's on the books, and, you know, where's all that going? So, you know, no one expected the Queen not to give the royal assent,
mm-hmm.
but it is a major milestone that now it's on the books. It's law. You know, it passed both houses. It's there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to believe a year, year and a half ago, be careful what you vote for.
Right.
Because, you know, if it was just sort of a whim, test the air type thing, it's reality.
Well, and the real world impacts now that step, Airbus pulling out.
Yep.
All these major corporations are now saying, you know what, we're out, we're gone.
Business, like the markets, they don't like uncertainty.
Yeah.
You know, and they would be remiss if they didn't take a more defensive stance. And, well, what's plan B? What's plan C if this thing does go through and everything sort of goes down? Now, you're dealing with London. I mean, you know, I don't think the UK will be, you know, marginalized or minimalized by any stretch of the imagination. You know, London has been a financial center for a long time. It's going to continue to be a financial center, whether they're in the EU or not in the EU. It started off because of where they were geographically. You know, they bridged, you know, the Far East. They bridged North America. They were in a perfect place. And that's why London really developed. And they were a major center back in the Middle Ages, you know. So that's not going to go away in 20 years or 30 years or 40 years. Switzerland, small country in and of itself. They seem to do just fine, mm-hmm. you know, in the global markets and, you know, as a player in the global markets. UK's got a lot of infrastructure, a lot of investment there. There's a lot of history there. Maybe in the next generation or maybe the two generations from now, it will start to have an impact. But I don't blame companies for sitting there taking a more defensive approach.
But it will be diminished, though, won't it? I mean, and you have some big-time investment firms saying, we're pulling our people out as well.
They will talk about the golden days of you know when the UK was in the EU, and they'll talk about it as a major financial center and what that meant. But remember, Great Britain wasn't in the EU originally. I mean, it was sort of in and of itself and off to itself and did just fine. So we'll see. You know, yeah. I mean, just because some countries or companies are starting to, you know, divest a little bit and move out and what ifs, I think that's prudent. I think the markets like that. I think it's very good for the markets. You know, I'd be more concerned if I was an investor in a company that wasn't doing that. But that's a deep root right there. And you're going to have to pull pretty hard to sit there and displace the London, you know, in the short run. In any way, shape, or form.
I know it's hard to make predictions, but do you think, would you predict that they'll come back to the EU at some point, or do you think they're...
Boy, that's a good question. I do another referendum, you know, yeah. Things change. I mean, let's see what really was the catalyst for them getting out. Again, it goes back to, you know, the whole immigration and border control. You know, that's what they wanted. It came back with their tax dollars, you know, how much was going, the tax spending that was coming out of Great Britain, how much was going to, you know, places within the EU outside of the UK. You know, those were the two big issues that they had. Change those dynamics a little bit? Sure. I mean, it makes economic sense for Great Britain to be in the EU. I mean, it just makes economic sense for them. They wanted border control. You know, they wanted, you know, dollars that we spend in taxes. We wanted here, you know, the people of the United mm-hmm. Kingdom. We don't want it going someplace else. Is that going to change in the next month, 2 months? Probably not. Is it going to change 5 years from now? Maybe. So I wouldn't rule out that they could, but you know, not under the current situation, no.
I always like when you come in because I have to ask you about Bitcoin every time. Bitcoin below $6,000 recently. People are still saying it's a scam. Some people are. Others are saying, hey, it's not dead. It's going to come back. Give us the real story on Bitcoin.
My view, and this is just my view. I mean, what I find encouraging about Bitcoin and the whole blockchain underlying mechanism under it, which is really the value that I see, it is starting to move from the speculative side, you know, to something of functionality, where all of a sudden you're seeing it in money transfer. And you take a look at what's happening between Hong Kong and the Philippines, and where it's actually being used to facilitate international money transfers. Now, that's functionality. That's not speculation. And how great that, A, it's led by Hong Kong, mm-hmm. and they're going into country like the Philippines. And you know what? This whole Bitcoin blockchain type thing could have true functionality in lesser developed countries that don't have big banking infrastructure in place to facilitate international mm-hmm. transfers of money. What a great place to start. What an I'm intrigued with this. I really am, because now you're getting away from just the crazy speculation that was going on of, oh, just get long Bitcoin or 19,000, whatever it is, you know, now it's down to six, that now you're using it for something. Just remember, with all the speculation that goes on in the commodity markets, the reason why they exist is to really facilitate trade, to facilitate international trade. There's functionality that's there. Now I'm starting to see blockchain, Bitcoin, start to have some real functionality. It's what we talked about several months ago was, you know, it's not so much Bitcoin as is. What's it going to morph into?
Right.
We're starting to see it morph.
Yeah, because all of these technologies started as something and always morphed into something else. I mean, you had Facebook is what we see now, but what was it before that? MySpace, right?
Right.
There was something called MySpace before that.
And somebody smarter and brighter came along and said, hey, we can use this for this application if we make these little tweaks. And all of a sudden now it becomes something functional and real. I love it.
Yeah.
I just absolutely love it. Creative mind, the human creative mind is amazing.
Don, always a good conversation. Thank you for coming in. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Don Lloyd is the SVP and Manager of Capital Markets, the Foreign Exchange, Rate Swaps, Commodity Derivatives at Associated Bank. He's our thought leader today. We do our thought leader conversation every Thursday. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page and follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And you can head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to meet more of our thought leaders and hear more conversations there. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago startup Catalytic has raised $5.6 million in new funding in an inside round from the startup's existing investors, which include Valor Equity and Hyde Park Angels. The artificial intelligence startup helps companies automate business processes using a software that simplifies common business tasks. Chicago dry cleaning startup PressBox is being acquired by Procter & Gamble, according to the Chicago Tribune. Terms of the deal were not disclosed. Launched in 2013, PressBox picks up consumers' dirty clothing from conveniently located lockers in apartment and office buildings, cleans them, and notifies customers when they're ready for pickup. And Amazon's annual shopping event, known as Prime Day, will be back on July 16th. Prime Day, which gives Prime members exclusive deals, will for the first time be Prime Day and a half, with offerings available through July 17th. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. Chicago's minimum wage has gone up another dollar per hour to $12 from $11. And a new study shows some mostly positive impacts for the economy and business. Frank Monzo IV is policy director of the Illinois Economic Policy Institute and is with us this morning. Frank, again, $11 to $12, soon to $13, I think, next year. There was a lot of concern over what might happen with the minimum wage going up. What does your study show?
Our study was conducted with the Project for Middle Class Renewal at the University of Illinois and Professor Bob Bruno with Robbie Habens. And we found that the Chicago minimum wage increase has already helped 330,000 workers in the city and has had no negative effect on business and employment growth.
And when you say no negative impact, what kinds of impacts would you be looking for?
Right. We find no evidence that the higher minimum wage hurt the Chicago economy. In fact, the unemployment rates, which is one indicator we would be looking at, fell further in the city of Chicago than it did in surrounding suburbs that did not change their minimum wages. And then business growth was on par with the suburbs. The Chicago economy is not doing worse, and in many respects is doing better than surrounding areas. And then, of course, we have things like Site Magazine, which is named Chicago the top city in America for corporate relocation and investment every year since the ordinance went into effect. So the higher minimum wage has not made Chicago a worse place to do business.
I remember when all of this was in the works, and even recently business owners were saying that this would be a labor cost, an increase of labor cost for them, and would cause them to raise prices and maybe even slash their budgets and maybe even slash some staff. So this study shows none of that is happening?
So our study did not specifically look at prices. That's kind of the next step. What the research has shown is that about a 10% increase in the minimum wage translates roughly into a 1% increase in prices. So we would expect a small increase in prices. When you think about supermarkets, apples are not necessarily being made in the Chicago area, right, when you're purchasing an apple there. So, again, the increase in prices is not one for one. It's much smaller. Looking at hours, we notice that hours have declined a little bit, but it hasn't been so meaningful as to reduce total annual incomes. Annual incomes have gone up in the city of Chicago on average, and they've gone up more for low-wage workers.
Are businesses adapting in other ways that this study doesn't pick up, or ways that you want to look at?
That's exactly what we would expect. We don't exactly have the answers to that in this particular study. One of the things we want to look at is worker turnover. Worker turnover is goes down in states that and areas that have raised their minimum wages. That's, you know, according to the preponderance of the literature, and we think that that may be happening here, although our study does not specifically speak to that.
Yeah.
Yes, we would expect that. We would expect that due to the no negative impact that we're seeing on employment, that employers are adjusting in other ways. That being said, we're also seeing that consumer demand in the economy is increasing from those low-wage workers, so they are creating indirectly more jobs because they're spending more in the economy, which is offsetting any kind of negative direct impact of the higher minimum wage on employment.
One of the things I know that you mentioned it earlier was the number of hours has been changed, but not by much. I think the study showed it was just a 1% drop in hours, so just a small cutback in hours, right?
Yeah, we found a 1% drop in hours on average, and we found that was concentrated in specific areas, and it was concentrated actually for private sector employees, public sector employees, and nonprofit employees, and then those who are self-employed, who of course are unaffected by the minimum wage. There was no change in hours for those types of workers. It was concentrated in the private sector.
How significant is the one of the other findings that apparently some of the employers are looking to younger workers, specifically teenage workers, who may have been excluded, who are excluded from this wage increase?
Yeah, exactly. The teen workers were excluded from the Chicago minimum wage ordinance, and teen workers in the city of Chicago can still be paid 50 cents less than the state's minimum wage. So that would be $7.75 an hour. So teens right now can earn $7.75 an hour, while the adult minimum wage is $12 an hour. That is a 55% difference, and that encourages employers to hire more teens instead of, you know, say, single mothers and other adult workers. And what we found is that there is, in fact, a higher demand for teens due to the minimum wage ordinance because of that gap, that incentivizing gap. But the other thing, of course, that we find is that the Chicago minimum wage ordinance has been a reasonably balanced policy that warrants further coverage and expansion. And so one of our recommendations is to raise the teen minimum wage, not necessarily to the $13 an hour, but to peg it at some level below so that incentive to only hire teens lessens, and that, you know, adult workers have a chance to actually, you know, raise their families.
Yeah, because I guess it's a double-edged sword. On one side, you like to see that finally some of these young workers are getting jobs, because I know in the past that they've had difficulty getting jobs. But on the other hand, you worry that these employers may start to take advantage of these younger workers because of this difference.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all about the perverse incentives that might be created. It's kind of like a tax break or a tax incentive to attract a company to the city of Chicago. How much is too much, right? How much per job are we willing to actually incentivize in order to bring a company like Amazon or something to the city? And so in this case, how much is too much? How much of that gap is permissible in order to actually encourage employers to hire teens and encourage teens to get employment experience? But, you know, how much of that comes at the expense of actually adult workers now becoming, you know, unemployed?
I guess, you know, when we look at this minimum wage going up in increments, I mean, that's one way to say, okay, well, maybe that made this less of a big deal for businesses because of the way it's going up incrementally. Is there some fear that when it gets to, let's say, $13, and, you know, if we then go beyond that and start going up higher, that the story will change a little bit?
That's a great question, and it's something, of course, we're going to study more and more as, you know, additional data comes in. You know, our study, this particular study with Professor Bruno and Habens at the University of Illinois, this study assesses the impact of a modest increase in the minimum wage from $8.25 an hour to about halfway there to $13 an hour at $10.50. So we cannot conclusively extrapolate our findings to what a, you know, $13 or even a $15 an hour minimum wage would be. But we can say that a higher minimum wage, a $13 minimum wage, is still likely to have positive impacts on these workers while having much smaller effects on employment or hours than predicted by the opponents of minimum wage increases. And so far, we have not gotten to the point where, you know, we would want to hit the brakes just yet.
Frank, are you watching other places around the country where they have been upping minimum wage a little bit higher? Is there anything happening in those places that you think might happen here or that you're watching very closely?
So in 2018, 18 states raised their minimum wage, and so did 19 other cities in addition to the city of Chicago. So it is happening everywhere. We are monitoring it. The Illinois Economic Policy Institute has not studied those other areas, and in particular the cities, but there are great groups out there that are studying those, and we're really looking to places like Seattle, which is raising their minimum wage and to $15 an hour, and they kind of already reached the $13 point that Chicago is trying to get to, and we're looking at what the effects have been there. There's some positive news, some negative news, and it's kind of monitoring monitoring all the data and kind of looking at through the weeds to see which study is in fact correct.
We're in the middle of this economic expansion still, maybe at the end of it, but still the economy is firing on all cylinders. How important is that, the good economy, to the outcomes, the positive outcomes that you've seen in the study?
Right. So that's one of our explanations for why the minimum wage maybe did not have a negative impact on employment, and it's that the economy is doing so well that employers have been able to absorb those higher labor costs. We don't entirely know. We know that the city of Chicago, during the course of our study, the city of Chicago and the metropolitan area added, you know, over 400,000 jobs from 2010 to 2016, whereas, of course, the rest of the state only added something like 11,000 jobs. So we live in a bifurcated state where the city and the surrounding areas are actually doing relatively well, and that maybe the rest of the state is not doing quite as well. So we think that the relatively strong economy in the Chicago area has helped employers absorb the higher labor costs. And then, of course, we think that the higher consumer demand associated with these wage increases have actually contributed to that better economy as well.
You've mentioned a couple times in passing what you'd like to study next. What will be the next focus of your research on this?
Yeah, the next focus has to look specifically a little more at different types of workers. There are workers who are excluded from the minimum wage ordinance, such as teenagers, and then there are specific occupations, such as those in recreation and fitness, so at gyms, or animal trainers are actually excluded from the ordinance. And so looking at specific groups of workers, looking at prices, and then, of course, just looking over time. So we only analyzed the first 2 years of the minimum wage increase because that's the data that we had. But it's been in effect now 3 years, so it's looking at the next hike to see what effect that had on the local economy.
Frank, good information, great insight. We appreciate you being with us this morning.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Frank Monto IV is a policy director at the Illinois Economic Policy Institute. You can find out more about them online at illinoisepi.org. And follow them on Twitter at Illinois EPI.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, numbers look like positive open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 136. That's more than 0.5%. NASDAQ futures are higher as well. S&P up about 0.5% as well, heading to the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time this morning. Gold and silver are lower this morning. Gold off almost 80 cents an ounce at $1,252.70. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Thursday, July 5th. Freddie Mac reports weekly mortgage rates today. We'll also get mortgage application numbers from the Mortgage Bankers Association. The Institute for Supply Management releases its service sector index for June, and the Federal Reserve minutes from its June interest rate meeting are set to be announced as well. The Challenger job cut report is due. Also today, a report on jobless claims. And also, the PMI services index is due out. We'll get a report on the EIA petroleum status and also the Fed balance sheet and money supply a little bit later on today. Tomorrow, look forward to the jobs report and tariffs on the first $34 billion of Chinese goods go into effect. So a busy couple of days to round out this week, and things that could definitely move the markets today and tomorrow.